Why don't we take a break, because it is 12. Dr. Press? Take a break? Okay, and... Okay. But I wanted to put it up onto the screen. Could I take a look? Do you have yours?
Let me just check in for my flight tomorrow.
Okay.
Previous item. Item 5, we're about to do...
Okay, I think we're ready to resume our meeting. And Ms. Hewitt, do you want to call roll? Because we have two board members that will not be joining us for agenda items 5 and 6.
Monica Hunter, absent. Recused.
Recused.
David Hodgen.
Present.
Daniel Press.
Present.
Russell Jeffries.
Present.
Jeffrey Young.
Here.
Gary Shellcross.
Here.
John Hayashi.
Present.
And Les Falker, recused.
Recused. Okay. I've got three cards here, and I'm not sure which agenda item numbers they refer to. Mr. Sennett, are you here? Steve Sennett?
Steve was here earlier.
Oh, it's not him.
Okay. Do you know what item he wanted to speak to? He put supplemental WDO-00-12, I guess. Maybe that refers to a CDO number. Mr. Alibi, are you here?
Yes.
Okay. You put Los Osos Wastewater Project. Is there a specific agenda item?
This is called
number 5. Okay. And then Marlene McQueen? Number 5? Okay. That. Pardon me? Number 6. Instead of number 5? Is that the same for Mr. Alibi? Number 6? Mr. Alibi instead of number 5?
I'm number 1019.
No, but I mean, you wanted to talk about the discussion of the future,
yeah.
Enforcement, so that's number 6. Okay. And Mrs. Payne, number 6. Okay. All right, we'll leave that aside. Okay. Mr. Thompson, do you have water code sections? You know, I wanted to just briefly touch on what is the language of the cease and desist order and cleanup and abatement order statutes. You know, there's at least with some people, there's a misunderstanding of what the law actually allows the board to do. And I wanted to put the statutes on the screen for everybody to look at.
13.3.
I want to review them. Well, we can start with the... It depends on if I can read them with my glasses and off the screen. Let's take a look at it.
13268.
Let's take a look at that.
What code?
Well, that's the reports required in the CDO.
Okay, but
so that's one. The other one is 13350.
Mm-hmm.
Which is 13350. And liability provisions are E. Here's the D, that's the court,
mm-hmm.
and E is the state board or regional board,
mm-hmm.
and assess liability on a daily basis.
Why don't I have you read us through this, if you wouldn't mind doing that.
And
as soon as Mr. Packard maybe wants, Matt can project that to the screen.
What section?
13350.
Toggle this. Yeah, that works.
Can you blow it up at all? Okay, the point I wanted to make is that the statutes do not empower the Water Board to order anybody from their homes under any circumstances. And I'm asking Mr. Richard just to briefly go through the statutes that apply to both cease and desist orders and cleanup and abatement orders so that we can maybe dispel this continued rumor and myth that gets bantied around.
Okay, this is the primary statute that provides authority for the regional board to impose civil liability on persons who violate orders. And the section 13350A sets the criteria for the board to be able to impose liability. And as you can see there, it says any person who violates any cease and desist order or cleanup and abatement order or in violation of any waste discharge requirement, waiver condition, certification, or other or prohibition issued by a regional board. And those are the primary ones that are relevant here. It goes on. There are other provisions about oil discharges and so forth. But people who violate cease and desist orders, who violate cleanup and abatement orders, or who violate who discharge in violation of a prohibition are subject to liability in accordance with subdivisions D and E. And D, which is over to the right, D prescribes the liability that can be imposed by a court if the regional board chooses to refer a violation to the Attorney General for judicial enforcement. E, which is down there at the bottom of the page, prescribes the liability that can be imposed administratively by a regional board for the violation set forth in subdivision A. And the basic liability is a maximum liability of $5,000 per day for each day of violation. When there is a discharge and a cleanup and abatement order is issued, the minimum liability shall be $500 a day, and the maximum liability would be $5,000. And those are the only sections that are really relevant to this. There is a provision that in subdivision F allows the regional board to make specific findings and impose a liability less than the $500 per day of violation that's prescribed for situations where a cleanup and abatement order has been issued. That is the extent of that is the only liability and the only sanction that a regional board is empowered to impose on people who violate requirements of cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders. There are other enforcement provisions related to injunctions. There are enforcement provisions specifically related to technical and monitoring reports that are required to be filed. The cease and desist order that has been proposed by the prosecution in this case and that has been adopted in the cases so far by the regional board includes reference also to section 13268, which prescribes liability for failure to file required reports or for falsification of those reports. And if you want to look at that, we can pull that one up as well.
Go ahead.
It simply provides that any person who fails to report or who falsifies would be subject to civil liability or possibly, in those contexts, to criminal prosecution if the regional board chose to do so. There it is, 13268. This is any person who fails or refuses to furnish a technical or monitoring report or who falsifies information is guilty of a misdemeanor and may be liable civilly in accordance with Subdivision B. And Subdivision B, down at the bottom of the page, specifies a liability, a maximum liability of $1,000 per day for any violation. Another section that's probably worth noting in this context is section 13327. If you could bring that one up, which prescribes the considerations that the regional board must take into account when it once it has determined that a violation has occurred and is proposing to impose liability pursuant to either section 13268 or section 13350. This is the provision that says, in determining the amount of civil liability, the regional board shall take into consideration the nature, circumstance, extent, and gravity of the violation or violations, whether the discharge is susceptible to cleanup or abatement, the degree of toxicity, and with respect to the violator, the ability to pay, which is critically important, the effect on ability to continue in business, any voluntary cleanup efforts, any prior history of violations, and the degree of culpability, economic benefit or savings, if any, resulting from the violation, and such other matters as justice may require. And with those very broad considerations to guide the board in its discretion, it gives the board ample opportunity to set liability that provides an adequate disincentive for noncompliance without imposing unreasonable economic hardship on a discharger. And that balancing is something that every regional board has to confront every time it considers the imposition of civil liability. So I think that does that
it does
provide you with the kind of context that you're looking for?
It does, and I mainly wanted the public to know that there's no the code doesn't grant the water board power to issue an order forcing anyone out of their home. People have decisions they can make if they are faced with a civil liability hearing in which they can make decisions on how they're going to comply if things get to that point in time. But I don't like misstatements. I'd rather someone say, we believe that the board is going to end up doing something, but don't tell me that the statutes say that you're empowered to do ordering us out of our homes, because it doesn't do the debate and the discussion any service. Okay. Having said that and discussed that, let's move on to